Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're talking with Dr. Carol Epsi Wilson, who is the First Lady of Morehouse College. And welcome, Dr. Carol. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You are here to talk about a breakfast that's taking place at Morehouse on Saturday the 18th to celebrate women in STEM. Can you tell our listeners why Morehouse decided to do this kind of program?
Well, really, it's not really celebrating women in STEM, although this year our speaker is a woman, Dr. Mae Jemison, who's the first black astronaut to go into space. But it's really to support, raise money for scholarships for Morehouse students who are majoring in STEM. As part of this initiative, we have this breakfast that's called the Women on the Move for STEM at Morehouse, because it's me together with a host committee of women who are dedicated to Morehouse for various reasons, because many of them have husbands, sons, uncles, and so forth that went to Morehouse, and they want to be able to give to Morehouse and help Morehouse be even more excellent. And so we came together, and because of my background in STEM, I'm an electrical engineer, and as a professor for over 25 years, knowing the difficulty that many students, particularly students of color, have in completing degrees in STEM due to financial hurdles that they have, many of them having to work while trying to go to school. And STEM areas are, you know, require a lot more focus than many other areas, so that being required to work while going to school often results in a lot of these students having to drop out of their majors and maybe drop out of school altogether. I've seen this happen a number of times, and so we wanted to make sure that the students at Morehouse would not have these financial difficulties. We want to lessen it as much as possible. So we have developed a fund that that's been endowed, and we're trying to build that endowment. Half of the money we raise every year goes to current youth scholarships, and then half goes to building this endowment that will be there in perpetuity to support scholarships for these students that have financial need.
Dr. Carol, I think that is wonderful, because you all you're saying that Morehouse now is endorsed by women and African-American
yes.
women. I think that means a whole lot.
Yes. Yes, we have a committee of about 50 women all over the U.S. who help raise this money every year.
I think that is great. Now, you mentioned the challenges faced by people of color in the STEM industry, in the STEM fields. And as a graduate of a HBCU, you know, School of Engineering at Howard University was packed. The School of Business, Computer Science majors were packed. And HBCUs graduate a number of qualified STEM graduates every year. Why is it that those students, those children, those young people never really get a chance?
In terms of careers in STEM?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are various reasons why that happens. One of the things that you have to, because there's so few of us in STEM, and for example, at the doctorate level, less than 2% of the PhDs in STEM are awarded to African Americans. And then even at the bachelor's level, we're well below the numbers. You know, with like there's 13% of us in the U.S., African Americans, but the number of degrees being earned in a STEM field by us is very, very small compared to, you know, how we make up the population. So one of the things you have to get comfortable with is being comfortable with being uncomfortable, because in a lot of these areas, you're going to be in situations where you don't see anyone else that looks like you. And some people will choose not to do that. And it's a very demanding area. You really have to be at the top of your game. When you're in STEM, you have to be able to feel comfortable putting yourself out there. And when you're the only one, and it's hard to have mentors when you're the only one. So there are a lot of hurdles. And not seeing anyone that looks like you around and having anyone that looks like you to help mentor you and advocate for you in these fields can make it uncomfortable, and many will choose to go into other areas instead where there are more people like them, where they can have friendships and have colleagues that look like themselves work with them. So I think that that's one factor that comes into play.
And Dr. Carroll, you were a first as an electrical engineer. What is it like being the first, and what do the people who are first have to do to make sure they are not the last?
Yes. Well, of course, as I just said, there are a lot of hurdles when you're the first that you have to jump over, and you have to make a decision. Is it worth it to jump over those hurdles to become the first? And some will choose not to do that because it can be very uncomfortable. There are people who won't like the fact that you're there. You know, I've had professors who would rather turn away than say hi to me. Okay, so it can be very uncomfortable. And you have to deal with a lot of isms, whether it's sexism, racism. You know, there are a lot of those attitudes that are still there and affect you. And so as an African-American, you're not only dealing with learning material that is not intuitively obvious, necessarily, is really difficult, requires a great degree of focus, a great degree of time commitment, but then you're having to deal with an environment that can be hostile. And so it's a lot to put yourself through. Now, I can say that I think it is worth it if you do enjoy the technical field. And they do allow you to be very creative if you build a strong background in math and science that you can build on. You get to work on some very exciting projects. And once you have proven yourself, you've gotten that PhD, you've become a professor, you're doing research, there are others who are going to want to work with you because you have become an expert in an area that many can benefit from if they're going to try to solve some of the more difficult problems in our society. So when you're on the other side of it, it's not the same kind of hurdles anymore. Sure, there are situations where you may have to, people are still looking to see, are you really, that good? So you may have to prove yourself to some extent. But for the most part, that goes away the more senior you get. And you have people reaching out to you who want to work with you. And you get to work with some really exciting problems with really good people that you end up forming relationships with, friendships with. And so on the other side of it, it can be very good. And I look forward to coming into work every day because I love the kind of problems that I work on. I really enjoy being creative. I'm not looking at the clock every day. I want to work on these problems. I want to solve them. I want to see my technology out there being used and improving the quality of life of people. So it can be a very, very rewarding career.
Dr. Carroll, this is the first time I've talked with someone in technology who has used the word creative so many different times. So I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Recently, some research was done that showed girls who are age 5 think that women can be super smart and, ultra smart and solve very hard challenges and problems. But for some reason, by age 6, they no longer feel that way. And the research talked about people who assume that children who are smart in math or that people who are smart in math and science, that it's just intuitive, that you're just graced to learn it. You're just graced to know it. You don't have to struggle. You don't have to work hard. What do you say to those people?
No, I think that's very rare. I'm not going to say there aren't people who are naturally gifted like that. But for the majority of people, it requires hard work. I mean, just look at Michael Jordan, and I think many of us know his story. He practiced hours and hours to develop his expertise, and look where it took him. That's true in any field. You really have to want it, and you have to be willing to focus and dedicate a lot of time to developing your craft, whatever that craft is. Everything require anything worth having is going to require a lot of hard work.
No truer words have ever been spoken. Now, I'm going to go back to Morehouse just for a minute.
Yes.
When we talk about those environments that make people uncomfortable, whether they're all one race, all white, all male, what can we talk to young men about at an early age so that they're more welcoming of women in positions in technology, whether it's taking direction from those women, working with those women, being teammates with those women? How can we start to make young men understand that diversity with women in the workplace is a good thing and it's something that they should welcome?
Well, I think there are a lot of men out there who are progressive. All of my PhD students, unfortunately, have been men. And I have no trouble with them looking at me as the authority, wanting me to be their supervisor, wanting to learn from me. I think that as more and more of us achieve very high-level positions and we're seen in that light, that's going to become more and more acceptable to people. And I think we are doing that more and more, but of course we have a long way to go. So I just think it's going to take a matter of time and seeing more of us out there doing things. Plus, you know, if you're raised in a family, and I think it all begins at home, how you start to view the world. And if you're raised by progressive parents who really believe women can do as well as men, like I know my son, he would not question whether he would work for a woman or not, because he has seen a lot of smart women who are really very successful in their various fields. So I think it begins in the home and teaching our young men about gender equity and role modeling for them successful women. Then I think, you know, when they're raised in that way, then there won't be any issues with accepting women in high level positions.
I hope we get there soon.
in time. Because
time.
Not everybody is doing that, right?
Right.
Not everybody is raising their sons in that way, and not everybody is exposing their sons in that way. So, but they can learn, and they can grow, and they can change as they're exposed.
Well, you mentioned family, and in my family, my sister grew up to be an electrical engineer, mm-hmm. and she was always pulling, you know, clocks apart, toasters, and, you know, she and my dad would put them back together. If he was working on the car, she was right there with him. But we've moved from a mechanical kind of society to a digital society. You know, when you lift up the hood of a car now, it's not like you can go in there and start messing around, because everything is enclosed in a box and it's got a computer. Is that leading to less interest in, you know, building and solving those kind of challenges because it's not as readily available to you as it was?
Well, I think that we definitely are in a digital age. But there's still a lot of technology, you know, experiences for students that they can have that will be hands-on. You know, that there are various robotics teams. There was recently, for example, we at the University of Maryland, our students placed very highly in this Hyperloop contest where they're building a vehicle for passengers and freight to go through space faster than what we can currently do with airlines. And so they're building robots and they're building vehicles, and so those mechanical things will always be there to some extent. And we try to ensure when we're teaching students here in engineering that we always have lab components where it's hands-on, they can feel the different devices that they're learning about theoretically in their classroom. So I think we'll always have to some extent, you know, hands-on experiences, and those are very important because you need to be able to feel and touch what you're doing, not just seeing simulations of it on a computer or drawings of it on paper. So it may change to some extent because we are doing more simulations of things on computers. But there are opportunities still to have hands-on experiences, and those are key.
Well, this has been great talking with you. I enjoy technology. I think I've always said math is that one subject that is not subjective, either it's right or wrong. So I've always enjoyed math. And I think this is what you all are doing to assist and support students in STEM is a wonderful thing. For our listeners who want to participate or to donate to the fund, how can they get more involved with this?
Sure. To make a donation, you can go to the Morehouse website, and under giving, and there will be a link there for giving, you'll see the Dr. Carol S. B. Wilson STEM Initiative. You can click on that and give online. It'll also you can also mail a check directly to the institution and designate that it's for the Dr. Carol S. B. Wilson STEM Initiative. For the event that we're having on the morning of February 18th, featuring Dr. Mae Jemison, you can go online as well, and there is right now a page that comes up where you'll see the STEM Initiative, and you can click on that, and it'll take you to our website for the STEM Initiative. But I can also give the URL for that, and that's www.morehouse.edu/STEM-scholarship.
Dr. Carol, thanks again so much for spending some time with us this morning and sharing about STEM, and hopefully we've encouraged some young ladies out there to follow in your footsteps.
Thank you.